believe assault is an act, not an adjective. Your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show. We talk about the different mass shootings that go on around the country. Oftentimes, they happen in a place of worship, some sort of church or synagogue or something along that lines. And here's a little story for you. I shared a story with you within, I don't know, the last week or two, about a lady in Detroit who was at 5:30 in the morning getting gas. Two bad guys come up and rob her, and she takes out her gun and starts shooting. One of the bad guys ends up dead. Here's another story out of Detroit. A retired police officer turned pastor shot and wounded a man who broke into his Detroit church, police said this last Monday. Lawrence Adams went to the Westside Bible Church on Sunday evening and found the intruder inside the building, said, Detroit Police Sergeant Aaron Steffens. The man began swinging an object at the retired police lieutenant, who pulled out a handgun and shot him in the abdomen. The pastor identified himself as a retired policeman. The guy kept swinging. Adams' wife, Iris, told the Associated Press on Monday that the pastor, who was not injured, was licensed to carry a handgun. Well, actually, the interesting thing is there is a federal law that says anyone who is a current law enforcement officer or a duly retired law enforcement officer can carry concealed throughout the country. That's really the only national permit there is, if you're current or retired law enforcement. Now, he may also have some sort of Michigan CCW, but if he's retired, he's got a badge, he doesn't need it. Police have not released the alleged intruder's name, but said he was being treated in area hospital. His injuries were not believed to be life-threatening. We'll talk about that in a little bit. Iris Adams said the church's security company called her at home Sunday after burglar alarm at the building was triggered. She telephoned her husband, who went to the church with his sister, she said. The non-denominational church has had a burglar in the past. Normally, they would break in one of our windows, Iris Adams said. Our alarm has always gone off. Lawrence Adams retired in 2006 after 25 years with the police department and was promoted to senior pastor at the church, where the couple had been members for several years in 2007, according to his wife. So, there we go with somebody breaking into a church. Now, it wasn't during a service, but it was to do whatever he was going to do. Pastor comes and shows up, identifies himself. Guy starts swinging an object at the guy. He shoots him, hitting him in the abdomen. Now, for those of you who need a little bit of a biology lesson, that is basically in the gut. If you got a beer belly, it would be just about in the center of that. That's the abdomen. Not an efficient place to shoot somebody. Not with a handgun. It's just not. It's a very, very painful way to go, but is not necessarily a stopper. All right? If you might remember the old school targets, I remember quite specifically one of the Dirty Harry films where Dirty Harry Callahan is firing at a target, and it's centered up right in the center of the belly. Before they really started realizing that's not a good place to shoot. And, of course, if you mash a shot and it goes lower, where's it going to go if you aim to the chest and mash? It'll go to the abdomen. If you're aiming at the abdomen and you mash, where's it going to go? That's right. Somebody's going to be singing soprano. You want to shoot to the chest. We'll talk more about that after the break. Stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
Rule 1, assume it's loaded. Rule 2, don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule 3. Listen to the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. 1-800-313-9443.
Welcome back. Okay, now that the commercials and all of that good stuff are done, a little bit about what's happening with Bill Carnes. By the way, got up this morning. I live in the high desert. It's 2,800 feet around here. 37 degrees on my way into the studio at 6:45 a.m. Of course, it's just a little bit after 7 o'clock here on the Pacific Coast, the West Coast, Pacific time where I'm at. And last week, I thought it was getting a little bit nippy when I came in and it was 59 degrees. Now it's a full 22 degrees less than that. And it's just the 5th of October. However, I do have to tell you, it was beautiful this weekend. It got a little bit windy a couple of days, a little breezy here and there. But, man, what nice sunny weather. And just fall is definitely here. It isn't coming anymore. It's definitely here, at least where I live. I got to tell you another thing. It's really frustrating. I have two computers that I use at home. I have a regular desktop computer, and in my house I have a couple of walk-in closets for the master, and they're both quite large. And one of them I turned into an office because I don't need two full closets worth of clothes. So one of them I turned into an office, and I ran extra power and networking and all that good stuff in there. But the thing is, I rarely ever use that computer. I generally use a fancy HP Pavilion laptop that I leave on a TV tray in my living room so I can sit in there and do stuff. I like to stay in the big living room in my house and not be cramped into a smaller office. That's just where I like to be. Unless I've really got to get something done and I don't want any distractions, I'll go into my small office and do things there. And I have the best virus, antivirus stuff and firewalls and everything on my computer, but something got on there last night to where I couldn't even run Windows in a standard window. I had to fire it up in safe mode, and whatever is on there got it to the point where I couldn't even fire up my system mechanic or anything like that. I actually had to go to my desktop, download a very small, quick version of antivirus software, put that on to my laptop, and then have it find a couple little things so I could then put on a bigger batter antivirus. That's running now. And I'm kind of surprised because I usually take very, very good care. And the only way that I could get anything on my computer is over the internet, because I don't put my stuff back and forth between different computers. I don't import things like that into my computer. So somewhere along the line, some of my software failed. I'm going to have to look at something even better than that, because this sort of thing is really frustrating for me. It happens every couple of years, as it does to most people. Something will happen, and I get frustrated, so I upgrade my software, and it's just one thing after another. Anyhow, just so you understand some of those things. Also, I didn't really get into it on the air. I was waiting for things to really come about until I started talking about it. However, things have changed in the last few days. I was in the process of becoming an integral part and a vested partner in a new company known as EGS, Eagle Guardian Solutions, based out of the Las Vegas area with a very good, very long time, very capable friend of mine. We've been friends for some time. Both of us, we met working out at Front Sight together. I was the lead range master. He was one of the senior range masters who was capable in several of the weapon systems out there. And we were in the process of putting this company together. It was more so his brainchild, but he needed a little muscle behind the hustle. So we put me in there as well as an integral partner. And as it turns out, we're much better friends than we are business associates. So over the last few days, I have completely abdicated myself of EGS. Any of you who have been on my website on 2aradio.com have seen a new header in there that says, I'm a principal partner in EGS, blah, da, 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 and some links. The links will remain for now, but the part about me being part of that is going to go away. And that's actually what I was in the process of getting done last night I was in the process of getting ready to do that last night. I was maybe 20 minutes away from getting it done when I had computer troubles. So that part's going to go away. I am no longer going to be part of EGS. And I made that substantially clear. We are still friends. I may participate a little bit here and there with EGS in the future on a very, very light basis, but no longer as a partner. As some of you who have ever experienced anything in business, one of the best ways, and probably the best way, to ruin a friendship is to go into business together. And that was on the horizon, just two very different approaches from two guys who have both had their own businesses and just go about business differently. So differently, in fact, I couldn't possibly see a way that this was going to work out. So I just kind of stepped up and said, look, I'm gone. I'm not gonna do like this. So what I have decided to do is to go into doing training just myself, just Bill Carnes. I have my first client lined up, just one individual guy, professional who lives in Las Vegas, who's looking for some shotgun and some handgun training. So he and I will be working one-on-one to get some of that stuff done. He wants to go from basic information all the way up to and including tactical application. So now he wants to work one-on-one, which is fine. I'm happy to work one-on-one. But I see firearms training similar to martial arts training, where in small groups, it seems to work out better because you can work with other people and kind of see how they're doing it. Some people are up on the line shooting. Others can watch and see how it should be done from a distance. And that really seems to be a very good way. You can see how other people are doing it correctly and see where mistakes happen and then correct it for yourself. So I find that to be a good thing because most humans are quite visual to be able to see things. Luckily, in shooting, everybody who shoots, for the most part, has sight. We don't have to. Sometimes we deal with people who may be deaf, but certainly you got to be able to see to be able to shoot. So everybody has an opportunity to watch others up on the line when they're sitting down taking a break. So with that in mind, I am in the process, again, once I get my computer fixed, of putting up some sort of catchy email address, and I'll be putting that together on my website. I'll be available for individual and group training, and I'll also be available for travel for this. Of course, if I'm traveling, there's going to be, I'm going to be compensated for the travel and whatnot. However, I am going to be available to be traveling around and doing some of this training. I have been holding off on doing that sort of thing. Another thing that I'm going to make sure of is when I go out and I do these things, I'll still be broadcasting the show. I'll just probably be doing it from a hotel room over said laptop computer that is currently in Screw City. But I'm not going to give up the radio show for this sort of thing. If anything else, I will pre-record a show the night before and play it the next morning so it's fresh material. But I'm going to set up an email address for that, and very possibly I may end up setting up a website. I would more so rather work on referrals and word of mouth than getting out there and trying to become some marketed piece of material. If any of you happen to have any interest in something like that, you can shoot me off an email to bill@2aradio.com for now until I get a separate email address set up. So I will be offering handgun, shotgun, rifle, precision long-range rifle, hunting rifle, and if submachine guns are legal in your state, I can come out there and teach you how to run a submachine gun as well, anything full auto that's handheld. If you have to mount it to the roof of your Humvee and it's a belt-fed deal, that's really not my forte. I'm not into the heavy weaponry when it comes to something like that. I'll certainly come out there and help you blow through some ammo, though. That I will do. But if you have an M16 or an Uzi or an HK USP or an M11, M10, something like that, I am fully geared up. As a matter of fact, the first weapon systems I ever actually range mastered in a large formalized course were full auto submachine guns and handheld machine guns. Just so some of you know the difference, actually, a machine gun and a submachine gun are qualified differently based on what sort of round they shoot. If you're shooting a handgun caliber out of a fully automatic gun or select fire burst fire gun, that is a submachine gun. If you're shooting a rifle caliber, that is a machine gun. And it's interesting because if you take an M16 that fires the 5.56 round, you're shooting a machine gun. But if you convert it to fire 9mm, it is now a submachine gun. And there are also much smaller bullpup full auto guns that look like about the size of an Uzi that fire a 5.56 round. Those are technically a machine gun. So it's not so much on the size, it's specifically whether it's a rifle caliber or a handgun caliber, whether it's a machine gun or a submachine gun, just so you guys know. I got some interesting responses back, and I'm going to read one of them in the next segment about the emails. Now, last Friday, I left you with the thought of this weekend, or perhaps next weekend, somebody's going to bust into your house, and they're going to try to take control of you and anybody that lives with you in your household, be it in your apartment, your condo, your home, your log cabin, wherever you're going to be on the weekend. And what are you prepared to do? Are you prepared right now? Because it seems as though people put their personal security a little bit further down on the list. Oh, I need to finish this for work, or take care of this for the kids, or do this with the car, or, you know, handle this with my folks, or whatever it might be. Until something happens, then all of a sudden, everything in the world takes a back seat to personal security. And usually, it's not until something happens that you realize you need to move something to the top of the list. And when it comes to your personal security, realize that could mean your life or the life of a loved one that you're putting in the back seat right now. So the idea to do physical security of your home to make it more difficult or less likely to be broken into is one. And two, be able to defend your life and the life of your loved ones. I got some interesting emails. I'm going to read one when we return from the break, and it kind of surmises what the rest of them said. So stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
Have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us. Right now, live, the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes.
Okay, so from the listener email bag, we have from Joe in Pennsylvania. Bill, your one-week challenge to defend the family is a thought-provoking one. Some of us are torn as what to do. My wife does not like guns and thinks I'm a radical just for listening to shows like yours, but I do anyways. Now, this is a very common thread where the wives believe that, you know, you don't need to worry about this sort of thing. That's on the outside. We'll address that in a bit. He continues, my shotgun is two steps away from the bed with a box of number two steel shot there open. Action is already open, ready to go. That's the best I can do. Being a light sleeper, the bad guy better be quiet breaking into my home. Although I would much rather have a handgun right beside me, it just would not be practical in this household. I raised two kids up to be hunters and respect guns with never one bit of trouble. At no time did I ever lock my gun cabinet. The kids could use the guns or take care of any problem that might come up around the property like varmints. Have a nice weekend, Bill. Joe in Pennsylvania. Thank you, Joe. This is actually a fairly typical sort of email. By the way, number two steel shot is not that effective when it comes to home security. You want double odd buck or even triple odd buck. Good old fashioned lead buckshot to stop bad guys. That's what you're looking for. Birdshot, do not load your shotguns with birdshot. Do not do it. Actually went through some expense with a former colleague of mine, and we actually started shooting at large pieces of rather inexpensive meat that had gone bad. And the furthest penetration we got was 1.25 inches with birdshot. 1.25 inches. That is exactly a flesh wound. That's it. A flesh wound. Do not use birdshot. Number two steel shot is certainly better than birdshot, but it's not buckshot. That's what home defense is all about. A buck is a good couple hundred pounds, right? 200-300 pounds, something that you would shoot an antelope or a deer with. Well, that's about the same size, weight, dimensions as a human being. And when you want them to stop, you would use the same load. So there you go. A lot of people have spouses or other significant others in their homes that don't like guns. The reason is, generally, they're ignorant of guns. They don't know anything about them. All they do is they know what they read in the papers, see on the news, and watch in movies, which is absolutely a completely inaccurate depiction of guns. It's an inaccurate depiction of gun owners in this country. Totally inaccurate. So they're going from other information. The only thing to really be able to change these folks' mind is to get them under the instruction of a professional to try to wipe out these preconceived irrational notions from what they've seen on television or read in the newspaper or even read online. I shouldn't even say newspaper. It's a dying breed. So good luck with that. That's everybody to have to deal with on their own. Here's another one. Now, last week, I read an email from a fellow named Tom that disagreed with me on my cleaning methods and went through the same military cleaning methods. And I responded, sent him an email, responded. As it turns out, the email ended up getting bounced back. So I had to send it to him from an alternate email address so he had it. But he did hear the response. Here's him. Hi, Bill. I enjoyed your 10-1 response regarding gun cleaning for accuracy. That was damn very good. 2 exclamation points. I'm interested in your cleaning guide, so please finish it up. The best way is to always test another method over time for just about anything to see what works best. Thanks, Tom. So that's from the guy who wrote the email that I responded to. So I then went back into the history on my website. It's kind of a default system called Horde, H-O-R-D-E. That handles my web email, and I hate it. I friggin' hate it. It is a piece of junk. It really, really, really stinks. Horde is horrible. So I am gonna try to get my web host to get me something else. Maybe I can do it through Outlook or something, but I hate Horde. It's terrible. Anyhow, I sent him the response. So thank you very much, Tom, for responding in kind. Here's one from a fellow by the name of Guy. Guy is a regular listener. Hi, Bill. Haven't been able to listen for a while, which I didn't realize. Finally back working and unfortunately not able to listen to 2A Radio. So I have now subscribed in order to listen to the archives here and hear the show. Quite honestly, if it was not for 2A Radio show, I would not spend the money for a subscription. It's $1.33 a month. Your show, in my opinion, is one of the best and worth the cash. So keep up the good work. Take care and God bless. Guy Grumps. Guy, thank you very much. The advantage to having the $1.33 a month listenership, or I should say membership, is you can listen to all of the archives of all of the great RBN hosts. If you go to 2aradio.com, you can get the archives just from this show, but you miss out on everybody else. By the way, I am about to have to take down all of May. Again, I can only keep about 3 or 4 months worth of archives on my site. So I'm about to take May down. You've got a couple of days to listen to anything from May before those come down to make room for October. So then there will be June, July, August, September up, and then October will grow. So the most you're ever going to see on there at one time is 5 months, which you have now. May, June, July, August, September. May's coming down. October will be going up. So just so you know, if you need to go back and hear any of those, or spend the $1.33 and go to RBN. That website. More to come after the break. Stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
And welcome back. I like that song. It's got a nice little bouncy feel to it. Something you might have seen on the Ed Sullivan Show back in the 60s. The riot of the day comes out of Phoenix, Arizona, where family says that a 911 tape caught Phoenix cops planning a cover-up after a shooting. Here's the story. And strap in for this. You might want to put a seatbelt on, because I jumped to my feet several times when I first read this. A homeowner says that a Phoenix police officer shot him 6 times in the back during a 911 home invasion call. And the 911 tape recorded the officer's partner saying, "That's all right. Don't worry about it. I got your back. We clear?" The family says the officers were not aware that the 911 call was still recording as they spoke about covering up the shooting. In their complaint in Maricopa County Court, Anthony and Leslie Arambula said the armed intruder crashed through their front window of their home on September 17th, 2008, that's a little over a year ago, and ran into one of their son's bedrooms. Anthony worried about his son, who was still in the bedroom. He said he held the intruder calmly at gunpoint and called 911. Phoenix police officers already in the neighborhood heard the crash of the Arambula's window. When they approached the house, his wife Leslie told Sergeant Sean Couch that her husband was inside, she was outside, inside holding the intruder at gunpoint. Leslie said that the sergeant failed to pass that information on to two other officers who had arrived. Inside the house, Arambulas say that Officer Brian Lilly shot Anthony, the homeowner, six times in the back while he was still on the phone with the 911 operator, twice, the last two of those six, was when he was on the ground. The officers ran into the bedroom after Anthony told him, you just shot the homeowner. The bad guy's in there. The complaint states that Officer Lilly admitted that it was only after Tony was lying bullet-ridden on the ground that he then assessed the situation. The 911 tape continued to record what happened even after Officer Lilly unloaded his weapon into Tony, including Officer Lilly's post-shooting one-word assessment, which is a single one-syllable word that rhymes with the mascot of the Aflac character. Okay, Tony believed he was going to die. The 911 tape recordings, records his plaintive goodbye to his family, saying, "I love you, I love you." Then Tony made what he believed was a dying request to the officers. He did not want his young family to see him shot and bloodied. Officers cautiously ignored his request and painfully dragged Tony by his injured leg through the home and out to his backyard patio, where they left him bloodied and shot right in front of his wife Leslie and sons Matthew and Zachary. The family said the officers later dragged Anthony onto gravel, then put him on top of the hot hood of a squad car and drove the squad car down the street with Tony lying on top, writhing in pain. According to the complaint, Lily can be heard on the 911 tape telling Sergeant Couch, "We effed up," well, to say the least. Lily said on the tape that he did not know where Anthony's gun was when he shot him, and that he opened fire because he heard loud noises and saw someone who looked like he might be the Hispanic male we were pursuing before getting into the Arambola's house, according to the complaint. The complaint states that Sergeant Counts knew that officers had just shot up and likely killed an innocent homeowner and the husband of Leslie, with whom he had spoken before entering the home, instead of the armed intruder. Sergeant Counts was quick to commence the cover-up of the terrible mistake. Sergeant Counts asked Officer Lilly where Tony's gun was at the time that Officer Lilly had opened fire on the homeowner. Officer Lilly admitted that he did not know where Tony's gun was. "I don't know. I just heard screaming and I fired." You should be jumping around by now, probably with the chair stuck to your butt because you strapped in. Lilly later told a police internal affairs investigator that Anthony had pointed his gun in his direction in the ready position, the complaint states. But Anthony says he was facing away from the officers, who could not have seen his gun, obviously, because he was shot in the back. The complaint continues, still not knowing that he's being reported on the being recorded on the 911 tape. Sergeant Counts interrupted Officer Zilli's admission and apology with his assurance that the cover-up would commence. "That's all right. Don't worry about it. I got your back. We clear?" After the shooting, the homeowners say that the Phoenix Police Department treated them like suspects in a drug bust, denying Leslie, Michael, and Zachary information about Anthony's condition and denying friends and family member access to him at the hospital. Anthony Arambula survived but continues to suffer in pain, which he expects will last for the rest of his life. The city of Phoenix and Officer Dezan Akhmanosovic are also named as defendants. The Arambulas seek punitive damages for gross negligence, civil rights violations, failure to supervise, excessive force, deliberate interference to medical needs, false arrest, and emotional distress. They are represented by Michael Manning with son Morrison Hecker. End of story. Now, I actually got this story that someone emailed it to me, and I am still blown away, and I read this thing earlier on the weekend. The problem is the first cop goes in there, he's all kinds of jacked up. Now, generally, when something like this happens, you got a cop who's already got his finger on the trigger just looking for something to shoot because he's pretty much figuring he's going to have to shoot somebody. Who knows? Something tells me the cop doesn't even know if he had his finger on the trigger at the time. And bam, 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 bam. Bam, bam, on the ground. Right? So that's what we've got. Now, he was shot six times. I wonder how many rounds the officer actually fired. Because in a typical police shooting, where you actually get about 17% hits, let's round that up to 20 a little bit, and he got shot six times. Let's see, six. I'm sorry, he would have had to fire 30 rounds to hit the average person. The average cop would have had to fire 30 rounds to get six hits. Let's just say it was six rounds. Four in the back, he goes on the ground, two more. Then they start the cover-up. It was a mistake. So, I have to tell you, I am not, because of this, this is not an isolated incident. This sort of thing happens around the country. And it happens on a common enough basis that my reaction to there's a home invader in my house, and if they're in there by themselves, fine, I'll call the cops. You know what I mean? I'll hold a perimeter in case the guy comes out and take care of it then. But if they're in there and it's just mere possessions, I don't care. I mean, I'll stand outside and wait for the guy to come out. I'm not going to go in there after him unless I've got loved ones in the house. And I, personally, me, with my level of training, what I know, would go into my house because I know the layout of it. I know what to expect. And also the people who are in my house would know how to handle things, at least until I got in there. All this stuff has been worked out. They have a pretty good idea on what to do, how to handle things, hostage situation, blah, blah, blah. So if I will go in there first and then call 911 later, because I don't want to call 911 and say I'm going in and then they, oh no, let the professionals handle it. Sorry. My professional level of handling something like this far exceeds just about anybody you're going to be sending out ever. I have thousands and thousands of hours of dealing with clearing houses and being able to shoot and things like that. So I'm not going to leave this up even to, but maybe the highest end SWAT trained guys, but they're not going to send SWAT out for something like this. They're going to send patrol out, and patrol's going to go and try to handle things. You're going to get, you know, trainees that are just out of the academy that never shot a gun before they got into the academy, and they had a whole 4 days worth of firearms training, and they might have requalified once since then. No, no, no. Not going to let you in my house with a gun in your hand. Sorry. So that's where I would go in there and handle things myself, then call 911. Well, Mr. Carnes, why is it that you went in and addressed the situation first before calling the police? Well, you know, I have just as much legal authority as the police do, and I'm better with a gun than any of them. So why would I send someone who has far inferior skills, does not know the layout of my house, and doesn't know who belongs and who doesn't belong, to go in there and handle something I am far more capable of handling? Why would I do that? There's my argument. The only authority the police have that I don't is that to execute a search warrant. That's all. There's no search warrant involved in this. Everyone in the sound of my voice, you have the same legal authority as anybody who's a law enforcement officer, who's a cop, with the exception of serving a search warrant. That's it. You can arrest people. It's called a citizen's arrest. Go through the same motions. I don't suggest going out there and playing cop as a citizen, but if something happens, you can do it. I have threatened two on duty. I shouldn't say threatened. I have warned two on-duty police officers that I was on the cusp of initiating a citizen's arrest on them while they were on duty for the following violations of law. Twice I have done this. Now, on both occasions, both of those cops backed off and we both parted companies immediately after that. And I let them know, you know what? It's about time, if this goes one step further, that I'm going to demand your supervisor and the watch commander out here, because I'm taking you into custody on a citizen's arrest for the following criminal violations. And I would name them off. The next portion of how this interaction goes is entirely up to you. And you may deny everything, but I got to tell you, I am going to make your professional life absolute hell, because I am smart enough and I know the law and I am articulate. And that, my friend, is going to turn over into your personal life. So the next move is entirely up to you. I've got nothing to lose. And that's the way I ended it. And both times, both of these cops thought about it, and we parted ways immediately thereafter. That's just me. But then again, I'm ballsy enough to do something like that. So, anyhow. But this sort of thing that happened in Phoenix is not an entirely isolated incident. And it just goes to show you what you can expect, potentially, if you end up in a situation where the cops need to come to your house and pull out guns and go searching through. They don't know who you are. They don't know who the people in your house are. They don't know whether they belong there or not. And quite honestly, patrol officers are generally not very well trained with guns. Generally not very well trained with guns. Okay? So, moving on. There is a story. I enjoyed reading this. This comes out of another story in Phoenix. It says, a gunman takes cash. I'm sorry, no, this is... was where a crowd... I'll read this other story in Phoenix. This is not funny by any means. It says, gunman takes cash, beer, and gropes a clerk at a Circle K in Phoenix. Police were searching for a man who took cash and a case of beer at gunpoint from a Circle K early Sunday morning. The robber took $70 in cash from the register and a case of Bud Light from the store on the 2700 block of West Glendale Avenue, which is kind of funny. I've been to that Circle K when I traveled through Phoenix to stop and get gas. It was also reported that the robber groped a female employee. The gunman was described as a Hispanic male between the ages of 25 and 50 years old, approximately 5'7", 170 pounds, wearing a brown hat, red and white striped shirt, black jeans. He left the scene in a green, newer model Honda Civic, police said. He took $70, a case of Bud Light. I mean, come on, get a real beer. That's Obama beer. And then groped the employee. So, ladies, do you realize that you have more to fear from bad guys than, say, men do? Sure. You have your physical body and your dignity that you need to be concerned with. Because if this is going to happen to this guy, it's going to happen to more. Now, here's kind of a funny story. It says, crowd foils robbery. Quick thinking and a decisive action thwarted a bank robbery last Wednesday morning in Burlington, Iowa, according to police. Consequently, Jody Monroe Johnson, 56, of Burlington, is behind bars charged with second-degree robbery, a felony that carries a penalty of 10 years in prison if convicted. He's due to appear before a judge. I think he went before him on Friday. Burlington police initially were called to Farmers Savings Bank Wednesday about a fight. While they were on their way, the officers were updated by dispatchers who said they were fielding several calls about an attempted robbery at the bank. According to detectives, an employee saw a suspicious man, later identified as Johnson, with his face concealed just outside the bank's entrance. As the employee went to investigate, Johnson, detectives said, confronted the employee while concealing an unidentified item in his hand. Information about what the suspect was holding has still not been disclosed. Police said Johnson tried to enter the bank and made his intentions known to rob it. And a scuffle ensued. And Johnson was quickly restrained by bank employees and customers. J.D. Henshaw, Des Moines County Sheriff's Reserve Deputy, who was nearby, was the first official to arrive and detain Johnson. Henshaw said the two men largely responsible for subduing the would-be bank robber, one a customer, happened to have a concealed weapons permit. He went into his vehicle, retrieved the weapon, and had Johnson at gunpoint while waiting for law enforcement. Johnson immediately was taken to the police station for questioning. Moments after the incident, Moments after the incident, the perimeter of the bank at the corner of Roosevelt and Sunnyside Avenues were cordoned off as police and sheriff's detectives talked to those inside. No one was allowed in or out of the parking lot as traffic there, too, was blocked until about noon. According to Des Moines County court records, Johnson has no other criminal dealings in the county besides two traffic tickets. A search of his address and phone listing were unsuccessful. The awareness and quick actions of the bank employees and several customers prevented a bad situation from becoming worse, according to a lieutenant. An employee suffered injuries but did not request medical attention at the scene. Steve Francis, the bank's manager, declined to comment and referred all questions to the police department. The only problem I have with this is the guy with the CCW left his gun in the car. How many times are you going to be a CCW holder and have the luxury of being able to go what could be 100 feet or more to your vehicle to retrieve a gun to help out a situation? I don't even want to calculate the odds. Keep your gun on you. Stay tuned. More after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
A lot of things tend to get in front of the public opinion, and the news media would tend to make you believe that it's skewed one way or another, just to kind of benefit whatever agenda they may have. And most oftentimes, the major news media, the major news sources, will try to skew things away from the fringe element and make it look more mainstream when in fact it is not. Things about gun control are certainly one of them. The majority of Americans believe in the Second Amendment and believe in the individual's right to keep and bear arms. But if you listen to the major news and you watch things like the 2020 thing that Diane Sawyer does and all the hit pieces that ABC does that are anti-gun, you will realize that they're trying to skew it against guns for whatever purpose they have. Another one of the things is this whole thing with the separation of church and state, the myth of the separation of church and state. Many people believe it's in the Constitution. It's not. It says that Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. So that's really the only part that attached that. It means that the country will not start a religion. The reason is that's what happened in England. And the separation of church and state is actually a mixed jumbling of words that in a letter that Thomas Jefferson wrote to some guys in New England, they were afraid something like that might happen. So here's an NBC.com online poll. It says, should the motto, "In God We Trust," be removed from U.S. currency? Your options are one of two. Yes, it's a violation of the principle of separation of church and state. Or no, the motto has historical and patriotic significance and does nothing to establish a state religion. In, let's see here, 17,572,883 responses, minus one of them. Yes, it's a violation of the principle of separation of church and state, 11%. 89% said no, the motto has historical and patriotic significance and does nothing to establish a state religion. 89% of 17.5 million respondents said no. 11% said yes. Overwhelming, this should not even be an issue. When 9 out of 10 people say, oh, there's no problem with it, the 1 out of 10 people that say, yes, there's a problem with it, have too much time on their hands to be able to concentrate too much on the peas and forget about the steak. And they're probably also the 10% of the population that believes that separation of church and state is in the Constitution, which it is not. It was in a letter that Thomas Jefferson wrote to some parishioners up in New England. So, there you have it. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Thank you for spending your day with me. I'll be back tomorrow.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The Two-Way Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.